In the 21st century, scientific research is changing our boundaries on a day-to-day basis. And when it comes to research into sight loss, there seems to be constant strides forward. But let's not forget, research can be a very long-term thing, sometimes even decades of research before medicines or practices can make clinical trials. Well, Fight for Sight is a charity in the UK which helps fund sight loss research. And today I'm speaking with Michelle Acton, the Chief Executive of Fight for Sight. We're looking at funding into a particular Leber's eye condition. Michelle, tell us first of all, Fight for Sight, is that purely the charity's work? You raise money and you then distribute that money for research?
Yes, that's right. We're very grateful to everybody who supports us, who gives us funds. And what we want to do is to make sure that, those funds are spent on the best possible research to ensure that we can find ways of stopping people losing their sight.
You make awards each year, and you know, we're talking substantial amounts of money here.
Yes, that's right. We award between £3 and £4 million a year on excellent quality research projects which aim to try and address sight loss in a whole range of different eye diseases and conditions.
How do you actually assess the application? Is it quite a complex process?
It is a complex process. What we do is we put calls out to researchers for particular things that we want researched. And so researchers submit applications, and these are researchers who are based at universities and hospitals. They submit applications to us where they put forward a research proposal, and we then assess, using expert input, the quality of that proposal. So what this means is that actually all the grants that we make have been through a selection process. It's competitive. And what this does is ensure that actually we are funding really excellent quality research.
We will be speaking with Patrick Uiman at the University of Cambridge. But can you tell us, Michelle, a little bit about Leber's itself? I know it's quite a vast area to talk about.
Yes, it is. Full title is Leber's Hereditary Optic Neuropathy, shortened to LHON. It's an inherited condition which causes sight loss primarily in the centre of the field of vision. And most people who have LHON are young men, and symptoms usually appear by the age of 30, but tend to start from teens onwards. The first signs may be a slightly blurred vision or trouble seeing colours in one eye, but symptoms usually appear in the other eye a few weeks or months later. And severe sight loss in both eyes can develop very quickly in just 3 or 4 months. But in some people, it may take a couple of years. Interestingly, in some patients, thought to be around 20%, they can experience some spontaneous visual recovery, usually within the first year or two. And so we're really keen to actually fund research so we can learn more about this condition and develop treatments to be able to ensure that people don't lose their sight.
And to tell us more about the research, we have with us Dr. Patrick Uiman from Cambridge University and Moorfields Eye Hospital. Patrick, thank you very much for joining us.
Sure, it's a pleasure for me.
Tell me, first of all, then, a little bit more about this Leber's condition.
So Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy is also known as LHON, and it's a mitochondrial genetic disorder, meaning that it's due to a genetic defect in your mitochondrial genome. So generally speaking, when we think about genetics, most of the genetic inheritance comes from both your mum and your dad. But when it comes to the mitochondrial genome, it's quite unique because you only inherit it from your mother. So this condition, Leber's optic neuropathy, is only transmitted down the maternal line, which is an important concept to realize in terms of genetic counseling and what you tell the family. So in terms of what happens in this condition, it tends to happen in young adults in their 20s and in their 30s. And unfortunately, very rapidly, you lose vision in both of your eyes. And the visual prognosis is not very good because only about 10 to 20% of patients will get some significant visual recovery. So most of the patients will end up being registered as being severely sight impaired. So it's a massive hit for the patient and the families.
You mentioned mitochondria. What is that?
It's a very interesting concept, because what happened in evolution is that your cell needed to produce energy. And what if at some primordial time, the cell absorbed a bacteria and that bacteria became part of the cell? So in many ways, the way I explained to people is that it is like tiny batteries that you have in your cell, which produce all the energy that you need for your normal day-to-day activities. So if there's a problem with these mitochondria, right, these batteries, you don't produce enough energy, and that's what causes disease. So disease can affect any organ in the human body, but for reasons that we still do not yet know clearly, the eye and the brain tend to be affected preferentially.
Staying on that mitochondria then, does everyone with this defect, will they have a deterioration in their vision?
That's a very important point that you've raised, Alan. So as I've mentioned already, the problem with Leber's optic neuropathy is that you have a genetic defect in your mitochondrial genome, and that goes down the maternal line. But what is very interesting is that if you inherit the genetic defect or the mutation from your mother, you're not bound to lose vision, or something that we call incomplete penetrance. So it varies from families to families, but roughly speaking, the rule of thumb is that if you're a man and you carry the genetic defect, your risk of losing vision is about 50%. And if you're a woman, your risk is about 10%. So already this is quite striking, because if you're a man, your risk of losing vision is 5 times more compared to a woman. And there's a lot of work that we're doing together with other collaborators elsewhere, trying to understand why there is such a marked sex bias, really, because this is quite striking. So the classical patient that will come to see me in clinic will be a young man in their 20s and in their 30s. So it does make the genetic counseling quite tricky, because we're only able to give some rough figures. We're not really able to predict, you know, with certainty, whether someone will lose vision or not. But what we do know is that if you carry this genetic defect and if you smoke, your risk of losing vision is significantly increased. So we really, you know, put a lot of emphasis on informing families that to reduce their risk of losing vision, they need to stop smoking, not only for their eyes, but for other good reasons as well.
Will that be the core part of your research then, looking at this almost selection, this genetic selection?
It's one of the major aspects that we're looking at. I work very closely with a good friend of mine here in Cambridge, Professor Patrick Chinnery. So we're looking at the possible influences that lead to someone losing vision. So it could be genetic, it could be environmental. I've mentioned smoking already. So this is part of a big study that we're running here in Cambridge, looking at blood samples that have been generously donated to us by families across the UK. So this is something that we need to find out, because if we're able to predict who's going to lose vision, this will have a major impact on the way that we approach treatment. The other major aspect of my research in Cambridge and in London is to try and come up with treatment for these patients, because you can imagine how this can have a huge impact on your quality of life with huge psychological consequences, because, you know, you're dealing with young people who are otherwise fit and well, and very rapidly they lose vision in both eyes. So, for example, at the moment we're running a gene therapy program at Morpheus Eye Hospital for a specific genetic defect for people who carry the 11778 mutation. The trials are ongoing at the moment, and we're hoping to get some of the preliminary results by the end of 2018. So it's only the first step. We're hoping this will be a positive step, but there's still a long way to go, because we need to realize that it's challenging to do clinical trials for rare disease, because we need to recruit sufficient number of patients to give us enough power to detect a change. And nowadays, clinical trials are very expensive, so we need to secure funding, which can be more difficult for rare diseases.
And you say that funding is obviously crucial, you know, when it comes to research like this. It can be years, even decades, before perhaps these things can get to clinical trials if we're looking at cures or treatments. So how vital is funding from charities like Fight for Sight?
I think Fight for Sight has been, you know, instrumental to a lot of the major breakthroughs in ophthalmology. And so from my point of view, Fight for Sight really bridges you know, that gap between, you know, having a great idea and having some potential, you know, projects that might benefit patients, and then being able to secure larger scale funding, because FIFOSIGHT is a charity. They rely very heavily on the generosity of the public and donors, and they are very good at providing what we call startup funding. So a small but important sum of money to allow you to get your pilot data, and then you can use that, right, and then go to other funders like the Medical Research Council, the Wellcome Trust, the BBSRC, and then you have a much better chance of securing these larger scale funding. So FIFOSIGHT fills in this very important gap about nurturing potential good projects and giving them a chance to move on to the next stage. And I think the other important thing is that FIFOSIGHT has done a lot of engagement with patients and with the government to try and increase the amount of funding that is being poured into eye research. Because if you think about this, when you speak to the public, the one thing they fear the most is losing their vision. But when you think about the amount of funding which gets channeled into eye research, it's disproportionately less compared with other areas. So it's also about advocacy. And that's where, you know, we as clinicians and as researchers, we help FIFOSIGHT to put the message across to the people who make the decision at higher levels.
Michelle, if people would like to learn more about the work of Fight for Sight or get involved in fundraising, what's the best way to do that?
Through the Fight for Sight website, which is fightforsight.org.uk. You can find out more on Twitter and on Facebook. Just search for Fight for Sight UK, or you can telephone the charity on 0207 264 3900 and request information.
We do wish you all the very best with the research. For the moment, to Michelle Acton from Fight for Sight and Dr. Patrick Uwaiman, thank you both for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Thank you very much.